When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark with Charles W. Chuck Bryant and Jerry and the air conditioner. So it's Stuff You Should Know.
It is a little loud today, isn't it?
From the dank bowels of our bowels.
Oh. I'm glad you laughed, because that's probably going to be the last one that you folks are going to hear.
Yeah, this one's heavy.
Over the next two episodes. Not a lot of great ways to inject humor into the Trail of Tears.
If it comes up and it's tasteful, we'll put it in there, sure.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, come on.
Yeah, and I said two-parter.
You just spoiled it.
Well, it's going to be a two-parter.
For Thursday.
This is a dense topic. And, so we'll do a Tuesday, Thursday on this, right?
Yeah.
Not a Thursday, next Tuesday.
No, that'd be weird.
Because people would sit around all weekend without access to the internet wondering how it all ended.
You know, it's funny. It is a very dense topic, Chuck, and I was a history major, man.
Ooh.
And I didn't realize how dense this topic was.
How much
background there was, how many things that came together to lead up to it. Because everything I knew about the Trail of Tears was what I think most people know about the Trail of Tears. It was, you know, the Cherokee people were forced onto this trail to move out west.
And it wasn't fun.
No, it was very sad.
Yeah.
And one of the longstanding urban legends or myths, or I don't know what you call it, but falsehoods that I always had heard, mm-hmm. was that it was called the Trail of Tears because despite all the hardships, the Indians were so stoic that it was the white settlers who came out to watch them leave that were crying.
I don't think I ever heard that.
I heard that for years, starting in grade school, going up to college.
Yeah, so it's not called an urban myth. It's called public school in America in the 80s.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was it. Overall, though, aside from that big falsehood, like my conception of the Trail of Tears was fairly correct, but it was limited, narrow.
Yeah.
It was such a much bigger event. It wasn't just one migration. It was actually multiple migrations. It involved more than just the Cherokee.
Sure.
It involved even more than just the southeastern tribes. Just about every tribe that was around west of the Mississippi was in about the 1830s, mm-hmm. forced
east of the Mississippi.
Yeah,
yeah.
Was forced west of the Mississippi against their will.
Which, as we'll see, there were other tribes west of the Mississippi who were like, what's going on here?
Yeah. We didn't invite you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and not just Native Americans were affected by this, but this forced migration, mm-hmm. had a huge impact on the African Americans who'd been brought here as slaves and were being forced into slave labor on these lands that the Indians were forced to migrate from.
Yes, very dense.
It was a huge, huge thing that happened, and it all happened in about a decade.
Yeah, and I think this is one of those that, you know, you don't know your past, you don't know your future type of thing. Like,
that should be a song lyric.
There's, you know, you look at stories like this and you can apply certain aspects of it to, modern times even.
Sure.
You know, that's all I'm going to say.
But no, it's true. I mean, like, it is true. There's probably a different, it's its own reasoning.
Yeah.
The Trail of Tears, what began and kicked off the Trail of Tears is its own thing that we don't really run into anymore. It's almost like inconceivable in the United States because we have so much land. But at the time, the United States was the 13 colonies. Mm-hmm. And it ran from Georgia up to, oh, basically Canada. What was the northernmost 13th colony or colony? Was it Massachusetts? Maine wasn't around, was it?
Well, it existed. They were weird Mainers even back then.
But it would have been under probably like French control or something in part of Canada, maybe?
I would guess. I don't know.
Well, at any rate, the colonial America was a, and the early United States was a strip of land along the eastern seaboard. West of that, west of the Appalachians, basically.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people, a lot of Native Americans. The French were running around. The British were out there as well. But for the most part, there was a lot of land elsewhere. But it, a lot of it was under Indian control, mm-hmm. Native American control. And so when the United States said, we want to push out. As a matter of fact, let's just take over the whole continent. What they ran into was that this land was already under Indian control and they had two choices. Either say, okay, we're going to stay here or go to war with the Indians. And the United States chose the latter at every turn.
Yeah, because like, and you put this one together. Very nice job.
Thank you.
But you astutely point out that, by the late 18th century, people, white European settlers had been commingling for a couple of centuries.
Right.
This wasn't like a brand new thing. And there was a big, push for more land because ostensibly what would happen is, white settlers would eventually say, you know, we think that you people, it's very cute that you're not, claiming ownership and you just kind of share and share alike mostly.
Right. You don't recognize property rights.
Yeah. Louis C.K. has a very funny old bit about that, by the way. You can look that up on YouTube, but, we think we can use this better than you have been using it since the dawn of time.
Right.
And, so we're going to, well, like you said, there's a couple of choices. You can stay here and become more like us.
Yeah.
Or you can get the heck out.
Well, those were the two ways of dealing with what came to be termed as the Indian problem in the early United States. And from the beginning, there was this problem where whites said, we need more land. The Indians had the land. Mm-hmm. So the whites wanted it.
Yeah.
And so there were those two ways of doing it. It was either you can stay and become one of us or you can move. And George Washington was actually a proponent of the first one called enculturation.
Yeah. Which, you know, depending on what tribe you were in and even within the tribe, it varied greatly on how much you were encultured. But a lot of Native Americans really, kind of jumped on board that. And, you know, and this is something I didn't really know to what degree it got to, but, you know, some of them gained great wealth and changed their names to Anglo names and had kids and gave them Anglo names. Some of them married white settlers.
Right.
They formed, I think, was it the Cherokee who established their own alphabet?
Yeah.
And had a bilingual newspaper by 1828.
Yeah, the Cherokee Phoenix.
Yeah, they were slave owners. I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them, well, a portion of them, really took to this, enculturation aspect and said, you know what? I'm on board. This sure beats the alternative, which is getting the heck out of Dodge.
Right. Plus, check out the steamship I just bought. You know?
Yeah, and I guess I shouldn't say get the heck out of Dodge because
that was further away.
It means Dodge City, right?
I think so.
Okay.
So there was the Cherokee, the Choctaw, the Chickasaw, the Seminole, and the Creek. And they were considered, there were many more tribes, obviously, around the United States than that. But those five were considered what were known to white people as the five civilized tribes. They were the ones who had enculturated the most. And it from what I understand out of all of them, the Cherokee was the most enculturated of even the five civilized tribes, right?
Enculturated or encultured?
I don't know. No. I have a thing. I've noticed people, instead of saying like, oriented.
Yeah.
They're adding like an aided there. So orientated.
Yeah. There's a lot of words like that I've noticed lately.
I don't know where this is coming from. Why? It's oriented is fine.
Yeah.
Why you gotta add a syllable?
Yeah. It's not just oriented. It seems we're losing our language.
Well, that's prescriptivist thinking.
No, I'm not like that. I've long championed the other, which is language evolves.
That's descriptivist.
Yeah, but I also don't think you should say orientated.
I agree. So that's just specific. That's just having case by case. Something stick in your craw.
So, what comes along with, enculturation is, adopting this European materialism and said, hey, I like having this nice stuff.
Right. And not only that, it shows other people, that I'm wealthy. I mean something.
Yeah. I've got some status here. And once, these Native Americans bought into that, these European settlers like, well, now we've got them.
Yeah.
This is kind of just what we hoped for. Mm-hmm. Not that it was some evil plan, but it kind of worked in their favor, basically.
Yeah, because if you were a leader in a Native American tribe, most of the Native American tribes, one way to consolidate your power and basically turn your position into an official chiefdom, become an actual chief of your tribe, was to basically be a patron to a large group of people, right? Mm-hmm. And especially among the five civilized tribes, the demand for white produced, European produced goods was pretty high. So if you get your hands on a lot of those and turn around and redistribute them like a patron
to your folks,
they were going to say, hey man, we'll follow you into battle. We'll go up against your political enemies on your side. You're our chief. And if you could do that with enough people, you could become chief of the whole tribe, right?
Right.
So early on, the Native Americans who were undertaking this process of becoming chief through distribution of wealth, they were just trading like pelts and stuff at trading posts.
Yeah, they had, it was supply and demand. The European settlers had these, you know, fancy new things that mm-hmm. the Native Americans had never seen. They wanted a piece of that. And the European settler said, boy, you folks are really good at hunting and skinning animals.
Yeah.
And the fur trade is lucrative. And so why don't we scratch each other's backs here? We set up these officially sanctioned trading posts and you can come, I was about to say buy, but I guess it was
trade.
Swapping stuff.
Sure, swapping.
The swapping post.
Right.
And, it sort of worked out for a little while until the fur trade started to decline because they wanted so much fur.
Right.
These animal populations started to dwindle a bit.
Right. So the Europeans still had all the stuff that the Native Americans wanted. Mm-hmm. The Native Americans were having a harder and harder time getting their hands on pelts to trade.
Yes.
What they found was that at the trading post, which by the way was the only place that they were legally allowed to trade.
I think you have to say trading post though.
The trading post.
Yeah.
They found that they could be extended lines of credit there.
Yeah, and that was kind of the beginning of the trouble.
Right. So if you were a Native American leader who was trading at a trading post and you went into debt from the understanding, the customary understanding between Anglos and Native Americans mm-hmm. was that you were in debt on behalf of your whole tribe. It wasn't just you.
Yeah.
It wasn't just your family. Your whole tribe was. The people who didn't like you, the people who would follow you into battle,
mm-hmm.
didn't matter. Everybody was in debt now because of you. So all of a sudden, the Native American leaders who had gotten into this credit trap would say, you know, how can I repay you? And they tried every way they could.
Yeah.
The first thing they basically went to work, started growing crops, just did everything they could to pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
What they found was at the government at the trading post said, we don't want any of that. We don't want any money. We don't want any pelts anymore. We want your land. That's how you repay this debt. That's the only way.
Yeah, there was kind of a general thing I picked up on throughout this whole thing that there was either, well, it was probably both, a lack of understanding generally and a lack of caring about how these tribes functioned and worked before they got there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, these tribes were huge groups of people over wide swaths of land, and they weren't all like one huge nation with one central leader. Like it was very regional
right.
many times. And like you said, when they went to make these trades, the Indian chief might have thought, and by the way, I did look up like Indian, Native American, American Indian.
Right.
And in terms of discussing history, they say it's kind of okay to use all three.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to COA there.
That's a good one.
Thanks. But like the Native American chief might come in and in his mind, he's thinking, I'm just sort of making this deal for our little regional section
right.
of the Cherokee.
Right.
But to the white settlers, mm-hmm. they were like, I can't tell the difference. You're all one big tribe to me.
Right. You all got feathers on.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
That was sort of the attitude.
Right. So when they went into debt and when they couldn't repay the debt, the tribe would be forced to cede land to the government to repay that debt. So that is one way that massive amounts of land were ceded from Native Americans mm-hmm. in the Southeast and the East, ceded land to the federal government. Because the government, again, was in the business of collecting land from Native Americans and redistributing it to white settlers.
Yeah, and some of them kind of smartly and naively at the same time said, you know what, they're coming for our land, so maybe we can give them some of this land mm-hmm. in exchange to be able to keep some of it ourselves.
Right.
And so they tried this process at first.
And accommodation, basically.
Yeah, like, you let us keep some, you can have this.
We got some swampland we don't care about. We're not going to tell you that.
Right.
But you can have the swampland. You got to protect this.
And the settler said, sure, that sounds great.
Well, the federal government would say that. But what the problem was is the settlers, settlers who would encroach on that land were like, we didn't sign any treaty with you, and who's going to stop us? The federal government? No. They're not going to lift a finger. They may tell you one thing, but nobody's stopping me from coming on your land and hunting, growing crops,
sure.
building a barn, killing your livestock, maybe killing you.
There were squatters.
With impunity.
Yeah, and they either didn't get the message or they didn't care, or both.
Yeah.
It was probably both. So then what happens, and throughout this whole process, it's very cyclical. It happened over and over again in regions all over mm-hmm. the original, well, basically everywhere east of the Mississippi River. So this would happen. These people would squat, encroach, didn't care what deal they had made with the federal government. And so then there would be retaliation by the Native American tribes.
Yeah.
And they would fight each other. They would go, you know, into battle, not huge wars yet.
Right.
You know, these skirmishes basically would take place.
Skirmishes and massacres on both sides, for sure. I mean, you have to say it, like, it was very bloody and very brutal on both sides.
Yeah.
So when white blood was spilled, the federal government would arrive and say, probably shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Maybe there would be a battle with the tribe that was being subdued at the time. Maybe not, but either way, the treaty that the government hadn't been enforcing before mm-hmm. now was officially out the door. A new treaty had to be established that would include ceding even more lands to the federal government, which would in turn be given to white settlers who would come in and would then further encroach on the Indian land, and the cycle would start over again.
All right, so let's take a break. That was sort of the setup for enculturation. We're going to come back and talk about the other side of the coin, separation, proposed by one Thomas Jefferson, right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
All right, so you got George Washington saying, assimilate into our society. Maybe we can work this all out.
It'll be great. There won't be any problems.
Then you have Thomas Jefferson.
George Washington was a used car salesman, by the way.
No, he wasn't. Then Thomas Jefferson comes along and said, you know what? Here's what we should do. it's pretty clear that what will become our United States, he didn't use those words, is like the western border is going to be the Mississippi River.
Right.
Who needs anything west of the Mississippi?
Right.
What's out there? So here we have this Louisiana purchase. We just bought 827,000 square miles.
That's a lot of square miles.
That is a lot of square. We should do one on that, by the way, at some point.
Okay. We did one on the Lewis and Clark expedition. That had a lot to do with the Louisiana purchase.
That was one of my favorites too. Yeah. So he said, you know, here's what we'll do. Why don't we just relocate you folks west of the Mississippi? That way we've got our little country over here. Mm-hmm. You're out there where we, you know, you won't be bothered by us anymore. Trust me. I'm Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
And it'll work out for everyone. And then the Plains Indians were going, oh, well, what about us? We're already out here.
Yeah.
And they went, what?
Yeah.
Who are you?
We don't recognize you.
And like you point out, there were some real problems, one of which was it wasn't theirs to resettle or no. to resettle other people.
Right. Because what would become in the Americans' mind, the Indian territory, was already Indian territory. It was just different Indians.
Yeah.
But it also, I mean, it displays not like a lack of comprehension on the part of the federal government. It displays a lack of caring about what happened. It was like, there's already Indians out here. There's not white people out here. We're probably never going to want to go out here.
Yeah.
So get off of this land and go out here. And how about this? We'll say that the War Department will protect you.
Yeah, and another big problem was these Eastern Native Americans were like, well, we don't want to go out there.
Yeah.
We're used to the lush South, and right. I don't know how to succeed out there, really.
Yeah. Have you read our newspaper? We've been talking about this for years now. We don't want to move.
What was it called?
The newspaper? Cherokee Phoenix.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of confusing. It wasn't at the time because Phoenix didn't exist yet, but now, Cherokee or Phoenix, make up your mind, what town?
I don't think they meant the town.
I know, because it didn't exist yet.
Gotcha. I get the joke.
And did Phoenix burn or something? Is that why it's called Phoenix?
That I don't know. Someone will tell us from Phoenix.
Okay.
And then say, why haven't you toured Phoenix yet? We'll come to Phoenix at some point, right?
Probably.
Or Tucson. That might be more up our alley.
Or Yuma. Didn't you used to do time in Yuma?
Yeah, I did some hard time in Yuma. I don't know if we could fill a small restaurant in Yuma.
Okay.
There's just not a lot of people there.
All right, that's fine.
Maybe, you never know.
We'll do an intimate storyteller's show.
An evening with Josh and Chuck.
Right.
At my former restaurant, Juliana's Patio Cafe.
Nice. Yeah. That's some buzz marketing right there.
Yeah, I assume they're still around.
So I think ultimately we were talking about before I threw us off track was the Plains tribes were like, we're here. Please don't send anyone out here.
Yes.
And the Eastern tribes were like, we don't want to move. What are you guys not getting about this? And so the federal government said, ooh, this is a real pickle. What are we going to do? Oh, we'll just ignore both.
Well, yeah, and also they were, I don't know how aware they were of this, but what was going on were these factions were being created,
mm-hmm.
and within tribes they were being split into people who wanted to kind of stay and defend their homeland and people that were like, oh, maybe we should just pack up and go and try and resettle somewhere else.
Right.
And this factionalism, it was kind of a recurring thing, part of this big cycle, and would end up in many ways being their undoing, I think.
Yeah, and a lot of tribes basically split in two. Like in 1817, a group of Cherokees said, you know what? Forget it. We're just going to move to Indian territory.
Yeah.
And they did. They were called the Old Settlers.
We'll move from Indian territory to Indian territory.
Right. And
why are you calling us Indians?
Right, exactly. They ended up in Arkansas and then Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And basically were, the factionalism was already deep enough, but the separation then following that factionalism effectively split the Cherokee into two separate tribes, the Eastern and the Western.
Yeah.
But they were no longer like, it wasn't like the Eastern was the satellite division or the Western was the satellite division of the whole tribe. They were like two different tribes as a result of that. And that happened with more than just the Cherokee as well. This whole idea of should we stay and fight or should we just say forget it and move? It was a big problem. It was a big discussion that had a tough solution because if you said we need to move,
mm-hmm.
well, then you needed to negotiate a treaty so you could get as much land as possible out west.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to stay, you needed as many people as possible to stay because there's strength and safety in numbers.
Yeah.
So the fact that it was split was a real problem for the tribes themselves.
I wonder if the tribes had not split up, and in fact, if the tribes, all the different tribes had banded together.
Well, they tried that.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is, what was the total population east of the Mississippi River of Native Americans compared to white people?
I don't know, but I think it was significantly less.
Oh, okay. So they probably, it probably wouldn't have mattered.
No, but if you want to get into alternate histories, if the,
which I love,
if Native Americans had had an immunity to smallpox,
oh yeah,
there
sure
may not have been a United States.
Right.
Because
many more people.
Yeah, something like 100 million or something like that, as
yeah
much as Europe, all of Europe.
Yeah.
So had small bands of European colonists come, even if they'd sent like armies and stuff, they would have had a much harder time. But the fact that the North American continent had been effectively decimated,
yeah,
by smallpox meant that there were far fewer people and that their cultures had been hit in large part already by this breaking up of these epidemics.
All right, so I gave the world, or Hollywood, Sharknado.
Okay.
A TV show on the alternate history where smallpox never happened.
Right.
And Native Americans ended up enslaving the white man. Make that into a show, kind of like Man in the High Castle.
Right.
But you know, rewrite it for Native Americans coming out on
sure
top. Sure. That'd be pretty good.
Yeah, the white settlers are like, well, okay, we get it. We've upset you. We're just going to leave. And the Native yeah Americans were like, you're not going anywhere.
No, you're not. You see that boat? It's on fire.
That's our boat. We need that to escape.
All right. So, for the people that, said, you know, we're going to stay here. We're going to resist. One, there was a big thing that happened. Well, a couple of things that happened that kind of set the course of history in one direction that would never return.
Yeah.
Right here in Georgia, particularly North Georgia, particularly Dahlonega, Georgia, and other places, there was gold discovered. And whenever there's gold discovered, it triggers a gold rush.
Yeah.
A lot of people move there, which means you need, you know, sort of a supporting economy.
You need guys named Cookie to come out
and cook the beans.
Sure.
Right? See, I knew there would be humor in this. Everyone laughs at Cookie.
Poor
so that
cookie
couple, huh?
Poor Cookie.
I know. That coupled with the, invention and widespread availability of the cotton gin from one Eli Whitney,
mm-hmm,
it lowered the barrier to getting into cotton farming. And so you have these people moving south to get in the gold rush. Then you have people moving south for this land that was now super, super valuable.
Right. Yeah, it went from like just being coveted to being like, it's done. Like playtime is over. We're like, if you thought we were being nice before,
yeah,
we're going to war with you guys now.
Yeah. And violence really kind of ramped up at this point, because of the value of the land all of a sudden because of cotton and white settlers were basically like, we're taking this land.
Yeah. They were provoking, the Native Americans, harassing them. Just basically undertaking a terrorist campaign against the Native Americans on their land.
Yeah.
And then the federal government was being called to task for not doing more about the Indian problem.
Yeah.
So for a lot of the Native Americans east of the Mississippi, they basically saw this writing on the wall, like, this is never going to stop.
Right.
And we're going to have to go to war or we're going to have to leave. And so that factionalism started to lean a lot more toward people who were prepared to leave.
Right.
There were still plenty who were prepared to stay as well.
Yeah.
It just made that wedge even deeper, this understanding that, like, whites were never going to let up.
Yeah, like, we've given them some land and asked to keep some of it.
Right.
And they say, sure, but then they don't let us keep that land.
Right.
So this is not going to end well for us.
Yeah, and I mean, plus a lot of us are dying. They're killing our livestock.
Yeah.
They're burning our farms and houses. It was just a pretty horrible situation.
Yeah, I think early on in this piece you wrote, you called it possibly the darkest decade in American history.
Yeah.
Which is what, like 1830
uh-huh
to 1840?
About, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so the federal government does get involved, and their first go at this was saying in 1824, officially, like, how about we have this voluntary relocation thing.
Yeah.
And it's up to you. It's pretty nice out west.
Right.
You know, they're, you know, in Indian territory. Yeah. And again, they said, but we're in Indian territory.
Right.
And they said, well, we don't know what you're talking about. It's pretty nice. So why don't you just pack your bags and get out there? And then along came a man, who is fairly controversial through the lens of history.
Still today.
Yeah. Well, more than ever, probably today.
Yeah.
Named Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
From South Carolina.
Yeah, he was born in South Carolina. He made his name as a frontiersman lawyer.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is, what does that even mean?
You defend people for like squirrel related charges, I think. And he also was a wealthy planter, slave owner. But more than anything, he was elected president because he was the people's candidate. And he was the people's candidate because he was a war hero and very famous Indian fighter is what he was known as.
Yeah, and weirdly, an Indian fighter, but also had, which was it, the Choctaw that fought with him alongside him,
right,
at the Battle of New Orleans.
Yeah, so this,
which he kind of forgot or didn't forget, but didn't care much about.
Right, this the factionalism also resulted in tribes splitting and actually going to civil war with one another.
Yeah,
and so some that were in favor of accommodating the whites or the federal government would actually fight alongside them against the other members of their tribe.
Yeah.
And some of them did fight directly under Jackson at the Battle of New Orleans.
So weird.
But yeah, he was like, that was years ago.
Right.
Who cares?
So he had a nickname, the sharp knife or the long knife, because one of the things that he advocated for was genocide, basically. Kill all the women and children once we're done and we've had our victory. And that'll really kind of take care of this area.
Yeah, which is, it's really surprising that I looked all over. I didn't find any specific, like, this instant or this incident really characterizes that mentality.
Right.
He seemed to advocate it rhetorically.
Okay.
And he was a vicious, commander.
Yeah.
Military commander as far as fighting Indians went. But I didn't run across anything where he actually did just exterminate a whole village.
Right.
And he had plenty of opportunities to. So I guess he thought it was a good idea, but never really pulled the trigger or something like that. But I was really surprised because I'd always heard he was basically genocidal, but I never found any specific instance
right.
of him carrying out what amounted to genocide. He just advocated it.
Well, they didn't have cell phone cameras.
That's true.
Who knows what would have happened?
Yeah.
So you also bring up a good point, which is that this, this practice of massacre was happening on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
When the, American Indians, would win a battle, many times they would also have a massacre of women and children,
mm-hmm.
burn down an entire fort, perhaps. What was it? The massacre at Fort Mims
mm-hmm.
in, Alabama, or what would be Alabama. In 1813 is one of the prime examples.
Yeah, so the Creeks became a very deeply divided tribe with accommodationists fighting with the federal government against the resistance groups, which basically came to be known as the Red Sticks.
Yeah.
And the Red Sticks were basically an Indian army in the War of 1812. It's prior to the War of 1812, some of the northern frontier tribes had kind of come down, led by Tecumseh, I think, had come down and basically rallied everybody they could and said, we need to, like, stop this white encroachment once and for all and go to war and all just come together, forget our differences, and come together and beat back the federal government and these white settlers. And when the War of 1812 broke out, these groups sided with the British, and this gave the federal government license to basically declare war on the frontier tribes, including the Red Sticks. And at the Battle of Fort Mims, the Red Sticks surrounded Fort Mims, and inside were a bunch of white settlers, some African-American slaves, some accommodationist Creeks, and then some federal troops. And they set the fort on fire and killed almost everybody, including women and children.
Yeah, but interestingly, they spared the lives of most of the slaves and took them hostage.
Right.
So I like how you kind of brought in the how slaves factored into this whole thing, because I think a lot of that is sort of brushed aside.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, it is. And then you said, Chuck, that Jackson kind of forgot any alliance with,
yeah,
with Indians that fought with him. This is a great example of that. After this war with the Creeks, there was a second war with the Creeks, shortly after. And after that, the Creeks as a whole were forced to cede, their land, and 15,000 of them were forced to move out west.
Yeah.
After this battle, despite the fact that that included plenty of them who had fought alongside Jackson's federal troops.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, no allotment whatsoever. It was, from what I understand, to Jackson, you're an Indian. That was that. It didn't matter right. what you did. You were an Indian. You needed to go.
Yeah. And it's important to point out, like, you did here, that there were massacres on both sides. And while you can never justify the killing of families and women and children in such a, like, a vicious way, the white people were the invading force here.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's that's not kind of a pretty big, factor here.
It is. I think it is.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take another break, and we're going to come back and talk about Florida. Stuff you should know.
All right. Game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
All right, Florida, 18,
Florida,
17, the Sunshine State.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I used to love when I would go to Florida as a kid. I imagine they still do this. You would get free orange juice at the state line.
Right.
Did they still do that?
Yeah.
That's great. I just thought, like, oh my gosh, like, anything free.
Right.
I still have that mentality.
They have state prisoners lined up. You just pull over on the shoulder and they hand you a cup of orange juice. And you drive off.
I used to love the official, I still do, I just don't take a ton of road trips, the official, like, rest stations.
Uh-huh.
Instead of, you know, just hitting the gas station.
Sure.
Go to, like, the official, what are they called, rest areas?
Yeah, rest area.
Oh, man.
It's like a gas station, but without gas.
Yeah. And I had no idea how many crimes were being committed.
Sure.
Like, behind the outhouse.
Yeah, there's, what was it, what was the movie where that had? Was it, there's something about Mary?
Oh yeah, where Ben Stiller was,
he's at like he, the he rest went to stop take after.
A, take a leak in the woods right. And he got caught up in some,
doing like, a raid or something.
Yeah, some sting operation. All right, so it's 1817. Jackson says, you know what? Florida's kind of nice. I might like to take it for my own.
Sure. I hear they have orange juice down there.
Yeah, at the state line. But there was a problem. It was under Spanish rule at the time. And Florida was kind of a crazy place back then. It was a safe haven for militant Indians, runaway slaves, anyone who basically was an enemy of Americans.
Yeah, the Seminole tribe was like, you hate America too? Come join us.
Right.
And there were Maroons is what they were called, but runaway slaves who'd found safety living amongst the Seminoles.
Yeah, and Spain would arm them.
Right, because they would harass the United States and the federal army and the plantations along the border, right?
Yeah.
So the fact that there were runaway slaves down there with the Seminoles gave Jackson just enough of a reason to invade.
Not a legal reason,
though. No. He basically waged an illegal guerrilla war in Florida, Spanish Florida, against the Seminole. And then whenever he came across a Spanish fort, he'd just take that out. And then he'd claim that land as American.
Yeah, and this was under the order, the secret order, of President James Monroe, meaning Jackson went to Monroe and said, hey, we should stage a guerrilla war down there in Florida so we can grab some land. And Monroe said,
are you crazy? And he said, crazy like a fox.
And Monroe basically said, yeah, go do your thing. And it's illegal, but who cares?
Right. Just don't implicate me if you get caught. And Congress knew what was going on. There were people calling for him to be recalled to
Jackson, that is, right?
Right. Yeah, no one. You still run across historical documents. Well, not first or primary sources or anything, but like analysis of this era.
Yeah.
And Monroe does not get mentioned.
Oh,
you
really?
Only find him like here or there.
Interesting.
So he kept his cover pretty well, but Jackson was more than happy to take the fall. And when he came back finally after the first Seminole War, he came back a hero. He carved out large portions of Florida for the United States. He'd fought the Seminole. He'd lost.
Yeah.
But he still had gained enough ground against the Spanish, at least, that he was considered a hero.
Yeah, boy, this was the first Seminole War. We'll get to the others, but they were a tenacious group.
Oh, yeah. You don't mess with the Seminole.
I think that was their motto.
I think so, too.
So Jackson was a hero such that he was elected president in 1828. And, how do you call his followers? You say backwoods frontiersmen.
Yeah.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
But his, inauguration party was so wild that these, visitors that came to see the inauguration trashed the White House and they said, move this party outside. You folks are out of hand.
Right. And so depending on who you read, either it was great that Jackson opened the White House up to the American people for his inauguration party, and the Washington elite got the vapors and fainted.
Right.
Or it was just a bunch of brutes just trashing the White House who didn't know how to conduct themselves because they were all drunk on whiskey and wearing raccoons on their heads, some of which were still alive.
Really? So Jackson, needless to say, was a divisive figure in American history, so much so that his party was split during his candidacy in 1828.
Yeah, think about that.
Yeah.
The candidate for the Democrats was so divisive that the Democratic Party split in two during the election year.
Imagine such a thing.
That's crazy.
It is, and this also made me want to do a show on the history of political parties in the United States.
Yeah.
And how they have
changed. They switched sides a lot.
Yeah, two major times. And
That's a lot.
Which is why when you, I don't know, if you do too much social media stuff.
So at all?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you see people, you know, harping about like, oh, well, the Democrats were in favor of this and the Republicans were in favor of this. It's like, well, do a little research.
Right.
These are names that can't be applied as, you know, for 300 years as one single solitary set of values.
No, they switched sides a couple times.
Yeah.
Switched hats.
So what were the two, the Democrats and the
Whigs?
Yeah, the Whigs.
So,
great band. One of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The Afghan Whigs?
No, the Whigs.
In spiral carpets?
No.
Primal
they
Scream.
Were okay, though.
Primal Scream was good.
But the Whigs.
Okay.
Athens' own, Atlanta's own.
Oh, hey, Whigs.
Yeah.
With an H?
Yeah. We the old man band covers a few of their songs.
Okay.
Probably too many.
Okay. I'd just be like, oh, I guess this is an original of El Cheapo's if I heard it.
Well, there are no originals.
Well, then I'd have to correct myself.
That's right. So, Jackson had this belief, if you haven't picked up on it by now, that the right of discovery was more important than the right of occupancy.
Right. And by discovery, meaning, oh, hey, look, there's some Indian land we would like. Get off.
Yes.
That was basically the view that Jackson held. The thing was, it wasn't just Jackson. Again, he was a very popular, considered the people's president.
Yeah.
Who came into power against the entrenched elite who were considered corrupt. And he had a lot of public support behind him.
Yeah. Like we said earlier, we can use this land better than you can. And you're getting in the way of our ultimate prosperity.
Right. So he gave a State of the Union address in 1830 that really sums that up, his views on that. He said, "What good man would prefer a country covered with forests and ranged by a few thousand savages to our extensive republic, studded with cities, towns, and prosperous farms, embellished with all the improvements which art can devise or industry execute, occupied by more than 12 million happy people, and filled with all the blessings of liberty, civilization, and religion?"
And every American Indian raised their hand and said, "Me." And he went, "Well, not you."
Right.
I mean, what white person would prefer a country?
I should have qualified that, I see now.
But like you said, he had, you know, that was sort of the popular opinion at the time, is we came over here, fought for our independence, and so you know, let's really grow this country.
Right. We've got technology.
That's right.
So let's put it to use with the land.
It wasn't everyone, though. There was one, Henry Clay.
Yeah.
Shout out to our old friends, Joey and Andy Ciara, of the great band, the Henry Clay People.
That's right.
Which is no more.
They did the theme for the Stuff You Should Know TV show.
That's right. So Henry Clay was a candidate for the National Democratic Party.
They were the Whigs.
Right.
Just before they were called the Whigs.
That's right. They said, "What's a better name for a band?" Actually, National Democratic Party, pretty good band name.
It's okay.
Not bad. There are quite a few good band names in here, but I didn't say any of them because it would just be a bunch of like white hipster dudes kind of ripping off some cool Native American name.
Right.
So I'm not even going to mention them.
Ladies and gentlemen, Indian Territory.
There probably is a band called that.
Sure.
So Henry Clay was running for the National Democratic Party of the Whigs. And in 1832, he said, you know, a big part of my platform is to respect the Native American claim to their own land.
And to oppose Jackson's Indian removal policies.
Yeah. And everyone, well, not everyone, he lost pretty big.
Bad.
Yeah.
But he basically dedicated his campaign to opposing Jackson.
Yeah. So go Henry Clay.
Yeah. There's a guy, a senator from New Jersey named Theodore Freilinghuisen.
He probably wasn't a German immigrant at all, was he?
He gave a 6-hour speech in opposition to Indian removal. He had a pretty good quote. You want to take that one?
Yeah. "No argument can shake the political maxim that where the Indian always has been, he enjoys the absolute right to still be in the free exercise of his own modes of thought, government, and conduct."
Not bad.
And the populace was like, "No, screw that."
Right.
"We want to farm cotton and get gold." You ever been gold mining up there in Dahlonega?
No. But you know that's where there's gold in them, the Thar Hills. That's where it comes from. It's the mayor of Dahlonega.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I should say gold panning. They don't let you do gold mining in there.
No.
But you can go up there and gold pan.
They'd cut your arms off if you tried to gold mine up there. They take it seriously.
Another big critic of Indian removal, and we should totally do a podcast.
We have.
Davy Crockett. We did?
Yep.
No.
Yes, we did. Why was Davy Crockett king of the wild frontier?
Wow.
Remember,
boy, that
he
was
said,
an old one then, huh?
He said, "You may go to hell and I will go to Texas."
Yeah,
we
do
talked
remember
about,
that.
Yeah, just in the last couple of years.
No.
Swear.
All right, I'm going to look that up.
I will right now. You keep talking.
All right, so Davy Crockett, who I completely forgot that we podcasted on, was against this Indian removal, and he actually, like you said, he threatened to leave the U.S. for Texas if
Martin... Yeah, he was the first one to do that.
if Martin Van Buren was elected, and he was basically Jackson's successor that was going to kind of keep up this notion that Indian removal was the best path forward. And Van Buren was elected. So Crockett said, "All right, I'm going to Texas." And he did so.
Yeah, he did. He lost his Senate bid.
Uh-huh.
And he said, "You may go to hell and I will go to Texas."
Which was Tennessee, correct? His Senate bid?
Yeah. We did the episode in August 2013.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's getting bad.
Well, that was almost like 10 years ago.
Yeah, big shout out to Jill Hurley, by the way, our official stat keeper.
Yeah, thanks, Jill.
She has really done a good job with a spreadsheet that keeps track of how many episodes we've done.
She's basically the only person on the planet who knows for sure
yeah.
how many original episodes we've released.
Yeah, we have her locked away at the seed vault in Norway. It is Norway, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Jill just wrote us, and she said that, I believe, is it this November?
November 2nd.
Will be somewhere, it will be 1,000 episodes.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
They won't let us leave.
And all that is to say, please forgive me if I forget that we did Davy Crockett just 3 years ago.
Yeah.
If you had said 3 months ago, I would have just got up and left.
This August, it'll be 4 years ago.
So. Oh, okay.
So you're fine.
Yeah, because I don't remember anything after 1 year.
So there were also a lot of missionaries who had worked with especially the five civilized tribes.
Yeah, very interesting story there.
They sought to oppose Indian removal as well.
Uh-huh.
And
we're trying to make these people Christians.
Right.
You're messing up our bag.
And the federal government was like, well, that's a really great point, but we don't care.
Yeah.
And at first, we should say, we keep saying the federal government. The federal government was trying to figure out the best way forward. What they finally settled on was Jefferson's plan for separation, but that removal, that separation should be through a voluntary, peaceful removal, right?
Yeah.
The white settlers and then the states themselves were harassing the Indians on the ground.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas the federal government was like, hey, let's just try this or let's do that or something like that.
That wasn't the reality of what was really going on there.
No.
Yeah.
And a good example of that is Georgia passed a law that said that, if you are white, you have to apply for a license to live with Native Americans,
mm-hmm.
missionaries.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you were a missionary, they'd be like, approval denied.
Right.
Or application denied.
Yes. Either way.
Right.
So things were kind of going along like this for a little while. And then finally, in 1830, the official stance was made into law with the Indian Removal Act.
Right.
And this is what really set into motion what would become known as the Trail of Tears.
Right. And all of that harassment, all of the illegal activity, all of the encroachment, and mistreatment by white settlers and the states was now enshrined in federal law. It was now official policy under the Jackson administration.
Yeah. And that policy said broadly that, the president can come in, they can negotiate these treaties with tribes, these land deals, and we could grant land, in the Indian territory west of the Mississippi and relocate you. We have legal claim to do so.
Right. Now, if any of your people want to stay, they can stay.
Mm-hmm.
They will become citizens of the state they live in.
Yeah.
Not full citizens, but kind of citizens, we'll call them.
Yeah. You can get a little bit of land too.
Yep. They'll be given a parcel of land, but it's not going to be their ancestral land. We'll decide what land it turns out to be.
Right.
But they're basically just going to be acclimated and assimilated. And then what's more, if you choose to move, the War Department will enforce the treaties that we have with you. They'll keep people off of your land, native, white, or otherwise.
Yeah, and they'll also help you relocate. They'll help you get settled out there on the plains and make sure you're all taken care of.
Right. So as we've seen, the Creeks and the Seminoles have both said, we're not leaving and we're going to fight you. Right?
Yes.
The Cherokee tried a different tack. They tried the courts, actually.
It was very smart, actually.
Yeah.
Because what they did was they went back and used the federal government's own declaration against them.
Right.
Because they said, hey, you know, a while back, in order to make these deals, you had to made us sovereign people.
Right.
We made our land sovereign land.
The federal government recognized them as a sovereign nation in order to carry out these treaties,
yeah,
where they ceded land to the federal government.
Yeah, and said, so you remember when you did that? Well, you said it yourself. We're sovereign people.
Yeah, and we just drummed up this Constitution. We're a sovereign nation with sovereign soil within the borders of the U.S. And the Supreme Court actually affirmed that and said, you know what? Sorry, guys, the Cherokees at least are a sovereign nation, and you can't remove them.
Yeah, they said, you really didn't think this through. And in 1831, they ruled against Georgia in favor of that sovereignty. And you point out that's all well and fine, but that requires a president that says, oh, well, the Supreme Court said so, right. So I guess that's the deal.
Yeah, and Andrew Jackson was not that way. There's actually a quote. He was talking about Justice John Marshall, who wrote the majority opinion siding with the Cherokees. He said, Mr. Marshall has made his decision. Now let him enforce it.
So-called judge.
Right. So the idea that you have to have an executive branch willing to uphold or respect the decisions of the judicial branch in order for those judgments to be carried out.
Yeah.
If you don't have that, and you don't have a Congress that will check an executive that's not doing that,
yeah,
or a public that will,
yeah,
then things like the Indian removal process are allowed to happen. And on paper, the Indian Removal Act was supposed to be beneficial to Native Americans. It was supposed to be something that could be carried out peacefully. In actuality, under the administration of Andrew Jackson, it was a humanitarian travesty.
That's right. So that's the end of part one. I have no listener mail in our tradition of two-parters.
And in the tradition of those serious different stroke two-parters is where we got it, if you'll remember.
That's right. So, yeah, we'll hold off on listener mail, but you can send us out traditionally.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, stay tuned for part two coming out on Thursday. And in the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us, tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. Join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. It's all good again there, by the way.
Sorry about the hacking. And I know technically it's not hacking.
Send us an email to... Wow, that is... Really, somebody said that?
Oh, yeah.
Send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.